Well, good afternoon, everyone. It's great to be back here. I think it's been 2 years since we last had the opportunity to be here in Seattle. Everyone knows the reason why we missed last year. It wasn't exactly planned, but those things happen, and I'll talk about that in a few minutes. Certainly like to thank Ann Jewell for that beautiful special music. It's such a delight to have that in services, and I know it takes a lot of effort, a lot of planning to have that beautiful special music, so thank you for that. I certainly like to echo everything that the campers and staff said about camp. I thought it was just very delightful. Mr. Luker gave me a few compliments. I'm not sure I deserve them all. In fact, I know I don't. Actually, camp cannot happen without a great staff, and we had just a superior staff at camp this year. The main thing I tell the staff and those who have been there year for year are going to get tired of this speech, but I'm going to keep saying it until I at least come up with something better. But I tell them when they come to camp, I tell them every year, I said, you're selected to come to camp first and foremost because of who you are, and secondly, because of the skills that you bring. Now, that may sound like, well, isn't that the same thing? But in reality, it's not. There's a lot of people in this world with a lot of different skills, but to have the dedication towards the young people and to have their interests at heart first and foremost, that's not something you always find. In fact, sometimes it's a little bit difficult to find caring adults who do that. But I can guarantee you, for those of you who sent your kids or teenagers or young adults to camp this year and wanted them to have people who cared about them or interested in them, that's what they had. And it was just wonderful. It's a thrill for me to work with those types of people. It's a thrill for me. It's a real pleasure for my wife and I to be there, to see the development in the young people, to see staff, adults with that type of interest in them, and it was just thrilling. I do need to, I would like to compliment all the staff by name. I don't have time to do that. I would like to mention what Wendy and Dr. Dan, as he is called at camp, and also David Pate. I think a number of you know the Pate family. They're in the Tacoma area, but towards the end of camp, of course, we had that rather unfortunate accident on the water skiing, and the whole team deserves high compliments for how that was handled. Now, I think, you know, we don't like to have those events, but we do try to plan for emergencies when they happen, and it was very impressive to see, as unfortunate as this event was, as this accident was, how that was handled. David Pate, the oldest son of Lynn Pate, he's about 19 or 20 years old. This was his first year at camp. He was actually driving the boat when she hit the water wrong. It was nothing that he did in driving the boat. Those of you who know water skiing know most of the time when they fall wrong, it's the skier's fault. It's not really something that the boat driver has any real control over. But despite it being his first time at camp, he knew exactly how to react. He told her exactly what to do to stay in the water. Now, any of you know Bridget, she kind of has her mind of her own. She didn't stay in the water. She climbed in the boat. But he did everything right. It was handled quickly. I listened to the communications. I was down there in the water. Dr. Dan and Wendy were down there promptly, did everything correctly, called the paramedics, and they gave them high compliments. So they just did an excellent job in what could have been an extremely serious situation. In fact, for a while, it was a serious situation until we found out exactly what was going on with her neck. And we kind of tease Bridget now that we know she's okay, that she has to learn to stop falling head first. A few months ago, she had a nasty concussion in a basketball game because once again, she fell head first. And I told her, I said, you need to fall like I do. You know, I fall backside first. And it works out rather well most of the time. You know, I'm not suffering these serious head injuries. Anyway, my compliments to Wendy and to Dan and the water skiing crew for how they handled the situation. The other members of the water skiing crew, they went over, they talked to the dorm, they helped with the emotional aspect of the whole situation while others were handling the physical aspect. And again, just the whole situation, even though it was a very unfortunate accident, was handled beautifully and shows that God's hand was certainly in camp. In fact, that was the theme of our camp this year. That's the one thing I wanted to mention about camp. The theme of our camp this year is God is there and God is there for you. And both at the beginning of camp and then with this event at the end of the camp, that was made, I think, very clear to the campers and staff who were there, that God is certainly interested in them. He just does not only exist. We studied the proofs of his existence, creation, and evolution, but also that he is personally interested in every one of them. I think most of you know through the announcements that were made here that camp came very close to being canceled. And in fact, if camp needed to start a week earlier, it wouldn't have happened because the roads are actually to camp were closed because of the forest fire. In fact, the camp that was supposed to take place before our camp there at this site didn't take place. And in fact, the camp that was supposed to happen, a small two-day camp, when we were having our staff training, also did not take place. So God certainly blessed Camp Davidson this year with his intervention, the fact that it did take place, and I think it was a marvelous success. I was on the extended session with Glenn. My legs are still protesting the fact that I was on the extended session. That was a tough hike from the standpoint. It was very dry in Oregon right now, which, of course, led to the forest fires. But the other aspect that the dryness caused was the route up to the top of South Sister was very loose, sandy, dusty. For every two steps forward, you literally slid one step back. And that's not an exaggeration. Very loose rocks. And so it proved to be a challenge. We took a lot longer to get up than we initially thought it would, but in the end, most everybody made it up. There's a few people who suffered some altitude sickness, and we got them back down right away, but everyone made it up, and overall, camp was a great success. So thank you very much for your prayers in that regard, and look forward to next year. I'd certainly like to as well, I don't know if I'll ever get to the sermon today. I'm glad he allowed me a month to speak. I can take till 3 o'clock, is that what you said? Three? Actually, what I have prepared is more of a split sermon, so I don't fear going over time too greatly. I do want to bring you, though, greetings from the home office and from Mr. Holliday. He asked me to pass that along. He knew I was going to be out and about for 3 weeks, and he asked me to send greetings to from him wherever I went, so I don't want to neglect doing that, and certainly greetings from the 25 members of the home office staff. We work very hard, and we certainly appreciate your prayers and the hard work we know that takes place in the congregations as well in terms of getting the work done. I also, of course, do not want to neglect to thank you for the prayers for our family, for my wife, during this past year. You received, I think, verbally and perhaps also in writing, the various updates as we sent them out. It was not the most enjoyable time in our life, and I'm going to be speaking about that actually a little bit today. But there are many things that we learned, and one of them, although I don't think it was a case of not knowing it, but it was, proven to us overwhelmingly during this, is how many people were thinking about us and how many people remembered us in their prayers. It was tremendous in the cards and the emails, the phone calls that we received. It was literally overwhelming. I mean, I don't know how any other way to express it. And obviously, you see my wife is here. God intervened. I think God knew that I still needed a lot of help between now and in the kingdom. And so he said, Lisa needs to stay around. And so thank you so very much for all your support in that way. And like I said, I don't know what we have done without it. And it was just indescribable, the support that was. So again, thank you so much. And as Mr. Luker mentioned, it seems like we'll continue to have the opportunity for that type of prayerful support for people, perhaps all the way to the kingdom, unless God sees otherwise. But as somebody mentioned, perhaps it was before services in a conversation about the number of people seems to be increasing who are suffering serious illnesses and trials. So keep it up. It really does make a difference. Okay, I think that's all I have for introduction, but certainly be glad to talk with many of you afterwards, especially if you want to talk about camp. But please, talk to the staff who are here, talk to the campers who went, ask them questions about camp. I think you'll be enjoy the stories that they have. If they tell you any stories about me, do not believe it. They're wrong. Completely wrong. Do not talk to Mrs. Gibson. Do not talk to Leah Gibson at all. Totally incorrect what she has to say. I do need to mention one thing. I really appreciate LG being able to come to camp this year. He did a marvelous job on water skiing. This is our first year to have water skiing. We had three boats out there. Most of the time we just had two boats. One tended to be in the shop, but the water scene crew just did an outstanding job. Unfortunately, though, LG kind of let down in the main job that he had there at camp, and that was to try to keep Leah in line. I was kind of disappointed in that way, but, you know, he did a great job on water skiing. You know, I'll have him back in a year, but I'll have to work on the other, you know. I'm just giving both of them a hard time because they're valuable members of the staff and have contributed greatly, and they just love the kids. Anyway, let's get on with the message so I do not keep you till 3 o'clock, and hopefully I won't even keep you to 2 o'clock. One of the things I talked to the kids about at the beginning of camp and the campers, I asked them to think about change. In fact, I asked them how many of them put on their applications this year they wanted to change. Well, no one raised their hand, obviously. Nobody had put down the word change on their application. And I asked them to say, well, stop and think about it for a moment. How many of you put down you wanted to make new friends? Well, then, you know, hand shot up. You know, there goes my son's hand over there. I'm not asking the question now, son. Okay, oh, the hand shot up. I said, well, that's a change. Now, you didn't put down the word change, but if you want to make new friends, that's a change. That's a positive change. Then I asked them, well, how many of them wanted to learn some new activities? And we had several new activities this year at camp. We had a high challenge course, water skiing, the zip lines. By the way, if you ever want to improve your prayer life, try going up a 60-foot zip line. My timing was totally wrong on doing this because I got in towards the last of a group, and that's when, you know, the entire camp is going towards campfire, and they're all right under the zip line watching you to see how brave you are going to be. After telling you the campers all week, you know, about courage, about overcoming your fears, and then I'm sitting up there watching them from below. They all look like ants. But anyway, I asked them how many wanted to learn. Oh, that's a change. That was a change. I asked them how many of you wanted to improve your relationship with God and learn more about God. Again, all kinds of hands shot up, and I said, well, that's a change too. And so when I asked them again, how many of you came here to make a change? Well, then all the hands went up, and when they thought about what they wanted to do. And in the end, I asked them, how many of you made changes to yourself? How many experienced changes? And again, most of the hands shot up. What do you want to change? What do we want to change? What have we changed? You know, God presents us a challenge, not unsimilar or in many ways to what we present the kids at or the teens at camp. We present them with many challenges. We ask them to rise to the occasion, to rise to those challenges. God presents us with a challenge as well of change. He asks us to change. Now, you may not have a counselor or an activity director or someone else prompting you every day and every hour to take a look at those changes as we do at camp. So therefore, the challenge to us is even greater as Christians that we are continually prompting ourselves to change to become more like God the Father and Jesus Christ. Now, the thrill that we have as staff at camp is being able to see those changes. And on the extended session, a number of the campers asked me, what do I really enjoy about camp? And I say, what I really enjoy is watching the development. I mean, that gives me such a thrill to watch that, to watch people come, as we saw at camp, and LG can attest to this on water skiing, some young men who are shaking with panic at the idea of even getting in the water. It wasn't the case of, you know, getting behind, you know, a 5,000 horsepower motorboat and have them yank you around the lake the whole time. It was just even just getting in the water, just panic with fear. Who later on in camp decided, well, you know, getting in the boat wouldn't be such a problem. Actually, putting on a life jacket wouldn't be a problem. Getting on a donut, well, you know, I think I can even manage that. And they actually tried, and a number of those who are quaking with fear tried water skiing and tried various other activities. We see a lot of change at camp. We see change over the years. We see a depth of understanding. We see a maturity. We see campers becoming more concerned for others than themselves. We see a change in their relationship with God. On the extended session, I was extremely impressed. We saw a number of those older campers who were there stand step up and fulfill leadership roles when some of the staff had to go take care of those who were suffering from altitude sickness or perhaps an injury. As someone used to tell me, we had to make battlefield lieutenants, battlefield officers, and we had to assign some of the people who are actually campers there to the groups and to lead the groups back down the mountain. Of course, we had radios and everything, so everything was fine, but they stepped up. They stepped up and took over leadership and did an excellent job. In fact, I'd love to have them back next year fulfilling those roles as staff members. They just did an excellent job. We see a lot of changes in that regard. Now, all of us would like to change the world. I think there's any number of things we'd like to change in that regard. But we need to remember a saying that Gandhi actually stated. He says, "You must be the change you wish to see in the world." We have to be that change. If we'd like the world to be a better place, we have to be that change. And that's why I tell the staff every year when they come to camp, and frankly, I don't care if they are tired of me saying it, we need you because of who you are. We need people to model, to be what we have set as goals for these campers to be, what God has set for goals for these campers to be. And again, they rise to the occasion and do an excellent job. Now, there's a second type of change, though, that takes place in our lives. One type of change is the change that we initiate, that we cause. But there are other types of changes, and that's actually going to be the focus of this message today. Changes that happen to us. Changes that we don't cause, that frankly we have nothing to do with. You know, if I gave you $1 million, you know, that'd be a big change in your life. That'd be actually a lot of change, too. Bad joke, I know. Okay? Now, that would be a big change, but you didn't cause it, I did. Now, if I punched you in the nose, that would also be a big change in your life, but again, you didn't cause it, I did. One is positive and one is less positive. I think we all realize that we can change things about, you know, things in our lives, and we actually have a spiritual responsibility to do so. We all know that also that changes happen to us sometimes as well, sometimes unexpected, sometimes unpleasant. So the question I would like to ask you is, what do you do when change happens to you? What do you do when change happens to you? Rather than the change that you initiate, what do you do when change happens to you? Now, we could go through all kinds of big changes that can happen to us in life. There are job changes. Sometimes we lose a job. Sometimes we need to look for another job. Sometimes we need to move towns. Kids need to change schools. Family buys a new car, move to a different house, move to a different city. Perhaps a new brother or a new sister is born into the family. I was surprised to see when I asked the campers that question, how many of you have experienced having a brother or sister born into the family? Well, there are a lot of hands that went up. So they knew all about that change and about babies screaming in the night and those types of things. Initially, of course, change can be unsettling. We as human beings, we like consistency. We like things to stay the same. We like our comfortable beds. I really like my comfortable bed after being on that extended session. Really like it. We like coming home to the same house. We like people who are always nice to us. We like our close circle of friends. We like things in our control. The problem with change, of course, is it changes things. It changes things. It makes things different. It requires effort. We may not feel so in control. We are definitely outside, excuse me, outside our comfort zone. We may feel threatened. At the very least, we may not know how to handle it because it's new. And we haven't had any experience with the new that is happening in our life. You know, I asked the campers, and actually a few hands did go up, but how many of you felt 100% comfortable when you were on that zip line, when you were up 60 feet in the air? Yeah, Kennedy, put your hand down. That girl worries me. She literally worries me. Yeah, Kennedy was one of the few who put her hands up, and she felt totally comfortable out there. I'll admit I did not feel the least bit comfortable. I generally don't have a fear of heights. But, you know, when you're on a platform, and I kid you not, the platform is no bigger than this, the face of this podium. Maybe just a little bit, actually maybe just a little bit bigger going out to here is more in a square shape. And that's all the bigger it is. There are no railings around this platform. It is just one flat platform, and that is it. Like I said, only a few hands went up when they said that they actually felt comfortable up there, and Kennedy happened to be one. Most of us do not feel comfortable with change. I'd like to refer to the story of Joseph for a few minutes. You may want to go ahead, and we're going to read just a few scriptures in Genesis 39. Actually, beginning in Genesis 39, we'll touch on a few scriptures. I would like to think about, just for a second, all of us know the story of Joseph. We're not going to go through it verse by verse. But I'd like to, for us to think a minute about Joseph, about the changes that happened in his life. You know, where did life begin for Joseph? Well, life began for Joseph as the favorite son in a big family to a successful rancher. Jacob had become very successful, had become very wealthy in sheep, goats, maybe cattle, I can't rightly remember right now. But Joseph was the heir apparent. You know, he was Bill Gates Jr., essentially. You know, he was the heir apparent, and you know, life was good. Life was good for Joseph. There was not a problem. All of a sudden, he goes along one day. He wants to make a little bit of a visit to his brothers and say hi to them. He's suddenly thrown into a pit. Not only is he thrown into a pit, he's sold as a slave. Joseph, in a blink of an eye, just like that, goes from being the favorite son of a wealthy rancher to somebody else's property. Now, when you think of changes, just imagine that change. Most of us live a pretty good life. Most of us live a pretty good life. Imagine going from that situation to poverty, to somebody else's property. Well, that's what happened to Joseph. However, let's see what else happened to Joseph, despite this seemingly at the beginning very negative change. Genesis 39, verses 1 through 5. Now, Joseph had been taken down to Egypt, and Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh, captain of the guard, and the Egyptian, bought him from the Ishmaelites who had taken him down there. And the Lord was with Joseph, and he was a successful man, and he was in the house of his master, the Egyptian. And his master saw that the Lord was with him, and the Lord made all that he did prosper in his hand. Now, what did Joseph, despite this overwhelming change in his life, he's out of the country, he's away from his family, he's no longer heir to a wealthy rancher, none of that. What did Joseph not do, though? He did not forget God. Oh, water, thank you.
Thank you.
One of the things the extended session does to you is it dehydrates you. I'll be spending weeks trying to catch up on my water. Joseph did not forget God. He did not fall into so much despair and gloom that all he could focus anymore on was this bad thing that had happened to him. He did not forget God, and in turn, God did not forget him. Let's read verse 4. So Joseph found favor in his sight and served him. He made him overseer of his house, and all that he had he would put in his hand. So it was from the time that he had made him overseer of his house and all that he had that the Lord blessed the Egyptian's house for Joseph's sake, and the blessing of the Lord was on all that he had in the house and in the field. God continued to look out for Joseph, despite this big change that had happened in his life. Well, you know, we might think, okay, you know, it's not quite being heir to the wealthy rancher, but at least, you know, things are beginning to look up for Joseph a little bit. Well, boom, there comes another change. Now he's accused falsely of trying to sleep with his master's wife. Now he's thrown into prison based on a lie. Oh, boy, you know, he thought it couldn't get much worse for him being a slave. Well, yes, it could. He's now thrown into a prison on trumped-up charges. Again, you know, Joseph is faced with what would seem to us to be a quite a negative change in his life. And again, I would like us, as we're going through some of these scenarios of Joseph, to imagine, what would we do? What would our reaction be? What would we be thinking if those type of monumental changes would happen to us? Let's go to verse 20. Joseph's master took him and put him in prison, a place where the king's prisoners were confined, and he was there in prison. However, notice verse 21 again, same thing. But the Lord was with Joseph and showed him mercy, and he gave him favor in the sight of the keeper of the prison. And the keeper of the prison committed to Joseph's hand all the prisoners who were in the prison. Whatever they did there, it was his doing. The keeper of the prison did not look into anything that was under Joseph's hand, because the Lord was with him, and whatever he did, the Lord made it prosper. Joseph did not forget God despite these trials that he was going through, and God did not forget Joseph. What do we do when change happens to us? Of course, we know the rest of the story. Joseph then, of course, interpreted the dreams of the servants of Pharaoh, then a Pharaoh of himself. In Genesis 41, we see that Joseph goes from being a prisoner and a slave to, if you want to put it this way, vice pharaoh of Egypt. Let's go ahead and go over to Genesis 41 and read just a couple of verses here. Verse 39 in Genesis 41, the Pharaoh said to Joseph, "Inasmuch as God has shown you all this, there is no one as discerning and as wise as you. You shall be over my house and over all my people, and my people shall be ruled according to your word. Only in regard to the throne will I be greater than you." And Pharaoh said to Joseph, "See, I have set you over all the land of Egypt." And then Pharaoh took off his signet ring and off his hand and put it on Joseph's hand, and he clothed him in garments of fine linen and put a gold chain around his neck. And he had him ride in the second chariot which he had, and they cried out before him, "Bow the knee." So he set him over all the land of Egypt. Now, did God work out a very negative situation for Joseph? Was anything too great for God? Nothing was too great for God. Joseph goes from being, you know, in a prison, a prisoner, a despised, to the second-ranking official in all of Egypt. I would say that God did not forget Joseph, and Joseph also did his part. He did not forget God. He looked to God, and God worked it out. To me, though, what the most powerful statement of what Joseph saw or Joseph learned and experienced is actually in chapter 45. If you want to go over there for a second, because the story, of course, does go on. Eventually, his brothers come to Egypt to buy grain, and at first, Joseph tests them a little bit. In chapter 45, though, he does reveal himself to his brothers, and beginning in verse 3, then Joseph said to his brothers, "I am Joseph. Does my father still live?" But his brothers could not answer them, for they were dismayed in his presence. And Joseph said to his brothers, "Please come near to me." And they came near, and he said, "I am Joseph, your brother, whom you sold into Egypt." And here is the clincher, in my opinion. Here is what Joseph realized, despite all the negative that had happened to him. He said, "But now, do not therefore be grieved nor angry with yourselves because you sold me here, for God sent me before you to preserve life." For these 2 years, the famine has been in the land. There's still 5 more years to come. Verse 7, "God sent me before you to preserve a posterity for you in the earth and to save your lives by great deliverance. So now, it was not you who sent me here." Now, what would be our first reaction? As human beings, we would say, "You dirty, rotten, you know, so-and-sos, you sent me here just by luck, you know, that I'm here and I have this position, but look what you did to me." I mean, Joseph would have had the opportunity to exercise great revenge on his brothers had he chosen to do so. But he came to realize God's hand was in all of this. And despite the negative circumstances that Joseph had to go through, he saw God's hand and he saw that God had a purpose that he was working out. And that if it meant that he had to go through some negative trials for that purpose to be worked out, well, so be it. And he recognized that God had worked through and God's purpose had been fulfilled. What did Joseph do when changes happened to him? What did we do? What do we do? I'd like to read just portions of a small story. I think most of you, or a number of you, probably have heard it. There was an old man in the village. He was very poor, but even kings were jealous of him because he had a beautiful white horse. Such a horse had never been seen before because of its magnificent beauty and strength and its pure whiteness. Noblemen, kings, offered fabulous prices for the horse, but the old man would say, "This horse is not a horse to me. He is a friend. How can you sell him?" One morning he discovered that the horse was not in the stable. And the whole village gathered and they said, "Foolish old man, we knew it beforehand. Someday the horse would be stolen and you are so poor. How could you protect such a thing? Then better if you had sold it." The old man said, "Well, wait. Simply say that the horse is not in the stable. This is a fact. Everything else is speculation. Whether it is a misfortune or not, how do you know? How can you judge?" And the old man said, "I'll stick to the fact that the stable is empty and the horse is gone, but whether it's a misfortune or a blessing, we don't know." After 15 days, the horse returned. He had not been stolen. He had escaped to the wilderness. Not only had he come back, but he had brought a dozen wild horses with him. And now the people gathered and said, "Whoa, we were wrong. This is not a misfortune. It's a blessing. We're sorry we insisted." Well, the old man said, "Well, again, you're going too far. To say that the horse is back and there are other horses with him, well, that's a fact. But how do we know whether it's going to be a blessing or not? We cannot say." So the story goes on. The old man had a young son, an only son. The young son started to train the wild horses, and a week later he fell from one of them and his legs were broken. The people gathered again and were quick to speculate, "Oh, this is a tragedy." And the old man said, "You know, you're so obsessed with making interpretations and judgments. Who knows whether this is a misfortune or a blessing? We don't know what's going to come out of it. Life comes in fragments, and to judge the part is to assume that you know the total." After a few weeks, the country went to war with a neighboring country, and all the young men of the town were forcibly taken for the military. Only the old man's son was left because he was crippled. And it goes on and discusses a few more things, but the point is that, you know, we are quick to say whether it's a blessing or a curse, whether it's a fortune or a misfortune, and we, in that way, we can be, let's say, a little bit quick to limit what God can do out of that. I think all of us, how many remember the hee-haw? Never the, okay, good. Okay, I'm not the only person. You know, I didn't dare ask that at camp. You know, I'd get the deer in the headlight look from all the campers. What do you mean, hey, you know, hee-haw, what show is that? Remember the routine, though, in the barber chair, where you'd say, you know, he'd be describing something, and the guy in the barber chair would say to the barber, "Well, that's bad." And then the barber said, "Well, no, that's good." You know, and he'd go and describe, and the guy said, "Well, yeah, you're right, that is good." And then the barber would say, "Well, no, that's bad." You know, he went on and on about that. I won't try to duplicate that routine here. But again, from the story of Joseph and the story of this old man, what do we do when change happens to us? How do we react? How do we look at the future? I mentioned I did want to discuss our situation with my wife's cancer, which is now gone. And thank you again for your prayers, and thank God for his intervention for that. As you know, she was diagnosed with cancer in April 2001, a little over a year ago. Needless to say, we were crushed and devastated, and all of our families, our extended families, the last person we thought would ever have something like that was her. She was the healthiest. She ate her vegetables, I didn't. She ate her fruit, I didn't. She exercised more than I did. And that was the case with all our extended family. We were just devastated, crushed. The medical prognosis was 30% survival chance. That was the history of this particular type of cancer. As all of you know, she had months of very hard chemotherapy. We were in a tailspin for the first couple months, I would say, to say the least. We were most concerned for our kids, of course. We were wondering how was all this going to affect them. What would happen if God chose to say, you know, you know, time for Lisa is up. We'll see her in the kingdom, but, you know, what would we do in that case? Now, I wish I could tell you that my thoughts and reactions were as calm and as wise as Joseph or that old man, but they weren't. I saw nothing good in this. I was wondering, you know, you have 1,000 questions run through your head, and you can only answer, maybe one of them if you're lucky. I saw nothing good in this. I saw nothing good coming out of this. I wish I could say I was calm. I wasn't. I think I drove my wife nuts for the first couple of weeks. Some of you ladies heard about my infamous checklist that I came up with. You know, Mr. Luker was talking about how engineers think, and he was graphing, and, you know, beaver personalities like myself, well, we make lists. You know, we make checklists. And I had this wonderful checklist. I thought, a checklist is going to beat the cancer. So I had everything down for her, you know, when she's supposed to get up, when she's supposed to take her vitamins, when she's supposed to read, when she's supposed to go for a walk. You know, I don't think I had it quite down when she was supposed to use the bathroom or take a shower, but it was getting pretty close to that. So it was bad enough that my poor wife had cancer. Now she had a crazy man for a husband. Fortunately, my kids managed to remain sane, but it certainly had a big effect on them as well, and it was a traumatic time. So like I said, I wish I could say that my reactions were always like Joseph or always like this old man, but they weren't. I do think, though, that over the months, thanks to the prayers and encouragement of so many of you, that we did learn some things about coping with change, big or small, and we started to see many good things come out of that. We started to see that we were, perhaps, or at least I was, and my wife, she was very courageous, but at first I really didn't see what good would come out of that, but as time went on, we started to, you know, think about it, calm down a little bit, and started to see, well, you know, there are some good things that can come out of this, and certainly God is more powerful than any trial. I'd like to give you just a few areas to think about when you are faced with change. And I certainly do not pretend to be the expert on this, but perhaps these are some things that we can think about when we face changes in our life. Step one, and we saw, and in doing some reading about this, is to pause and pray. Pause and pray. We all know what happens when you hit the pause button on our video recorder. The picture stops right where it's at. It doesn't go on. It just stands still. When we are faced with change, one of the first things we need to do is pause. Don't do anything. Change causes us to worry, and people, when they worry, don't make good decisions. I can attest to that. My wife did not need a checklist. She did not need a checklist. We don't make good decisions when we worry. We need to pause. We need to stop and think. We need to pray. Now, the prayer part, that wasn't a problem. We were motivated to pray. But I didn't always pause. I tend to get in production mode real fast, and I started to get into production mode in regards to this. What we needed to do is just to simply stop. Pause, take account of the change that is happening, pray, discuss it with God, discuss it with friends, and then go on from there. Let's turn with me, if you would, to Philippians chapter 4. Philippians chapter 4 and verses 6 through 7. Philippians chapter 4, verses 6 through 7. It says, be anxious for nothing. In other words, don't let anxiety take over. Now, we will always suffer some anxiety. To say that we don't or won't is simply not working with reality. But God says, you know, don't let anxiety take over. Everything by prayer and supplication with thanksgiving, let your requests be known to God. So don't let anxiety take over. Go to God. Step one is to pause and pray. Now, what does God promise in that regard? Does he promise that he will take it away instantly, whatever the change may be? Well, I don't think you're going to read that in verse 7. Now, he does promise us several things in the Bible, and one of them is in verse 7, but one of the things that is not in verse 7 is that God will take away the negative change instantly. You don't find that. And in fact, I think if you consider the overall picture of human experience, even those whom God is working with, you will find that most of the time, while God can work instantaneous miracles, most of the time he doesn't. Just, you know, consider the people that you know. Consider the examples in the Bible. Most of the time, in terms of instantaneous miracles, from one moment being in a negative situation to the next moment being in a very positive one, most of the time God doesn't work that way. He doesn't work that way because he is interested in the long-term, our long-term growth. And good growth takes time. Most valuable trees are the ones that grow slowly. Now, what we do find, though, in verse 7 is this. Even if the trial is still there after our initial contact with God in prayer, even if the trial is still there, here is a promise we can bank on. The peace of God, which surpasses all understanding, will guard your hearts and minds through Christ Jesus. Now, it surpasses all understanding because in our minds as human beings, we say peace will come when the trial ends. Trial ends, we'll have peace. As long as we have the trial, no peace. Okay, that's the equation we make. With God's help, though, that doesn't have to be the equation. God says we can have peace. We can come away from the anxiety even if the trial is still there because of what? Did I lose a microphone? You know, this is the first time in my speaking I've ever blown a microphone. It's her fault? Yes, it is her fault. That's right. I forgot. Somehow this is Leah's fault. Am I back on? I'm back on. Okay, thank you. So again, the peace of God will be there if we don't forget God like Joseph did not forget God. Now, most likely, the trial is still going to be there. God certainly can and does work instantaneous miracles. But despite whether he does or doesn't in a particular situation, we can have that peace. We need to remember, or it's important for us to remember, that even though changes do happen to us, we decide what our attitude and approach and perspective will be about those changes. No one can take that away from us. Even if we do not cause the change in our life, God has given us that power to go to him and to experience that peace. Pause and pray is the first step to do whenever we are faced with a change, particularly a big or negative change. Step two is there is a time to plan then. After we have paused, we have prayed, we have talked about it with other people, we have, let's say, calmed down, we have experienced God's peace, there is a time to plan. We get scared and anxious about a change because we feel we're not in control. Well, if we plan, we find that we can regain control. We find we can regain control. For instance, if we are faced with a serious health problem, or maybe we are faced with a move, you know, there are things that we can do to say, you know, despite of what is happening to me, I'm going to take charge. I'm going to take charge of what is going to happen from here on out. Now, I didn't cause this change in me, but I am going to decide how I'm going to handle this change. And this is something my wife did extremely well, both in the mental area and also in the physical area. While she did nothing to cause the cancer, she did decide how she was going to handle the situation. She wasn't going to, you know, just wallow in her circumstances. She took charge of what she was going to do. She was determined to continue to help other people and serve wherever she could, despite her reduced capacity physically. Not to say that we didn't need help. We did need help. We needed a lot of help. We needed a lot of encouragement. But she certainly set a great example of after she got me calmed down, she took charge. And in fact, even from the medical standpoint, that's what the doctors say you have to do. You have to take charge of your own circumstances. There's a point where we can rely on other people. We have to rely on people. But after a while, We have to make sure we have a plan that we are doing. And that can happen with any change that we have. Let's turn over to Genesis 6 just real quick. I'm not going to read this, but maybe you want to refer to the scriptures regarding Noah. You know, a big change had happened to God, and a big change, as a result, happened to Noah. The big change that happened to God and his plan was that man had become so corrupt that God said, okay, it cannot go on any longer like this. So God had a plan. And Noah, he gave that plan to Noah. And, of course, we know the story. And like I said, if you just want to review some of these scriptures about God saw the wickedness was so great, he said, I have to wipe everybody out. But Noah, you have found favor. I have a plan for you. I have a plan so that you are saved, and I have a plan so that all mankind through you will also continue, that the human race will simply not be wiped out totally off the face of the earth. So we need to come up with a plan of how we're going to take control of the change that has happened in our life. Lisa came up with a health plan. We also planned to do fun things with each other, with the kids. Our friends planned a lot of how they were going to help us, and they did. Come every time that she had to go for treatment, there was a new load of food that arrived in our refrigerator. My kids were particularly grateful for that because they knew how I cooked. And basically, I don't. So all those practical steps do help manage whatever we're going through at that time. And the third and final thing I would like us to remember, and that we needed to remember, all of us need to remember if we're going through some big change, is promise. Simply promise. Remember how God worked out everything for Joseph? Our theme at camp was God is there, and God is there for us. God is there to help us. God is there because he loves us. We use that theme we took off from Hebrews 11 and verse 6. Faith is not only believing that God exists, but God is a rewarder of those who diligently seek him. Most important thing to remember is the promise that God is there for us and will help work everything out. Turn with me, if you would, to Romans chapter 8. Now, working everything out doesn't always mean it's going to work out according to our solution. My solution was a good one. I thought it was a good one. My solution, God, she needs to be healed now. You know, that was my solution. I thought it was a real good solution. You know, I could make a pretty plausible defense for that solution. And in fact, when it didn't happen now, then I had other certain deadlines. Well, you know, we still have a couple weeks before the first chemo. You know, man, that's great timing. You know, God, I think that'd be a great time for her to be healed. It didn't happen. It didn't happen. It doesn't always happen to our timetable. Nevertheless, God, if we don't forget him, he will definitely not forget us. Romans chapter 8 and verse 28. This is a scripture, you know, I think I read in multiple translations, and if I knew multiple languages, I would have read it in multiple languages. We know that all things work together for good to those who love God, to those who are called according to his purpose. Verse 31, what shall we say then to these things? If God is for us, who, and maybe I would add the word what, can be against us? Truly, when we think about it, no matter how severe the circumstances, is anything greater than God? Is any negative greater than God's goodness, God's mercy, God's faith towards us? Well, he goes on to talk about that. Verse 35, who shall separate us from the love of Christ? Tribulation? Tribulation a big enough wall to keep God away from us? Distress? Persecution? Famine? Nakedness? Peril? Sword? Verse 37, yet in all these things we are more than conquerors through him who loved us. For I'm persuaded that neither death nor life. Now, that's a powerful, all-encompassing statement. But when you think about it, not even death can separate us from God. You know, the worst thing that we can think of that could happen to us as human beings is death. is death a problem for God? It says later on that Jesus Christ will have victory over death. Death is not a problem for God. There's the resurrection. In fact, there is more than one resurrection. Not even death. The worst thing that could happen to us is a problem for God. He will work it out. Again, it may not be according to our desire or how we see things, but remember the lesson of the story of the old man. We can only see part, a very small part of what is going on. Joseph, certainly at certain times of his life, would have also only been able to see a very small part. You know, as he's sitting in the dungeon, he probably did not have in his mind, in a few days, he's going to be vice pharaoh. Probably didn't really enter his mind. He was just probably hoping to get out of prison. You know, that would have been a nice change just to get out of prison. Okay. We can only see a part. God, though, sees the whole. He sees the whole, and he helps us make it through the whole. So even the worst thing that can happen to us is not too strong for God. He can reverse death. He will reverse death. And someday death will have a death. Death will no longer exist. That's what's going to happen to death. Anyway, it goes on to say, nor angels, nor principalities, nor powers, nor things present, nor things to come, nor height, nor depth, nor any other created thing shall be able to separate us from the love of God, which is in Christ Jesus our Lord. When Lisa was first diagnosed with cancer, I thought this was the worst. I thought, you know, it really doesn't get much worse than this. Well, as time went on, we realized, you know, as bad as it was, we realized that there are people who actually had it worse than we did. I wouldn't want to duplicate that situation. I hope we never do and wouldn't want to wish it upon anybody, but there are people who are actually going through even worse trials than that. We began to realize that, you know, God, through His mercy, can bring a lot of good from a lot of bad. I think, I hope, I pray that we have learned more compassion for others because of what we've been through. I know she was able to help two other ladies in that exact same congregation, I think with nearly the identical or very similar type of cancer, at least with one lady it was the identical type of cancer. She was able to help them. She was able to encourage them even while she was going through the same herself. I know I am more thankful for her, for our wife, for my kids, for the blessings that we have. Truly saw the support of so many thousands of people through emails and cards and letters. Truly saw God's hand at work as my wife's health was restored. Truly saw God's hand at work as He helped increase our faith and confidence in Him, no matter what the outcome would have been. And I obviously, we were both praying and fasting and diligently seeking God that His answer would be yes. But I do think we came to the point that, well, even if His answer was going to be no, even if that would end up being His answer, that we got to the point that we could say, okay, we can't see everything. We may not be able to understand. We may not even agree with that decision. But we did trust in God enough that He would make the right decision. And again, we are certainly not perfect, and we have a long ways to grow in this. But God has certainly given us mercy, and we certainly do appreciate that. Alexander Graham Bell said, when one door closes, another door opens. But he also said, but if we look too long and so regretfully upon the closed door, we will not see the ones which open for us. Sometimes doors do close in life, but God can make even bigger doors open for us. There are changes that we make in our lives. There are changes that happen to us. A couple things don't change. Our ability to determine our perspective in our life of how we will go through life and God's love and His plan for all of us. If we remember this, any change can be turned into that positive opportunity that Alexander Bell described.